found this in Ganarum. Ganamir Ni.
What is it?
Well, it's a performance.
Welcome to Synthaholics. This is your host, David Duncan, and with me is two people. Or half a person and another person.
Oh, man. I guess I'm the half a person. This is Aaron O'Brien, half of just his legs.
Just a part of him.
Just his legs.
It was just that little small noise. I was like, oh, maybe not a full person.
No, my torso.
Not a co-janitor, though.
My torso got left somewhere else behind.
Torso boy. And?
Oh, Faith Hertzberg.
Yes.
That person.
So
you sound so unhappy to be here.
She's with us.
No, I'm happy to be here, just not happy to be Faith.
Well, we have happy news to make everyone happy because we've got a great story that surfaced a couple days ago.
Aaron's birthday was on Saturday. Well,
that was happy in his own way, but this is happier.
He was gifted a book that was written by Larry Nemechek, the Starfleet Stellar Cartography.
Yeah, that was totally not – I don't think that was even planned. My friend just gave it to me. He was like, you know, I thought you'd like this. And I was like, oh, cool. And I didn't even know it was written by Larry. So
yeah, I was like, isn't that by Larry? And then I looked it up when I got home. I was like, Larry Nemechek. And we just had him on the show last week.
I know. So which I missed him. I could have shown him off my new book.
Well, it wouldn't have happened yet.
True. Yeah, that didn't happen yet. But the other thing besides my fun birthday was we got the story that Brian Fuller is now attached to the project of the new Star Trek series that will be coming out in January 2017.
Brian Fuller, he's the guy who brought to M'Pak Noor a great episode of Deep Space Nine.
And he also did Hannibal. And the show Pushing Up Daisies. And he also is currently directing the Neil Gaiman story, American Gods, which is a fantastic book. If you've not read American Gods, you know, go get that book.
But most importantly, he wrote two Deep Space Nine episodes and either co-wrote or the story by 20 of Star Trek Voyager episodes, including the episode that we talked with Larry Nemechek the first time about, Mortal Coil.
Okay. Yeah.
And, you know, Larry gave us the rundown on how he enjoys kind of a darker tone to his things. And I liked the Hannibal show a lot, and it was really dark and really, really grisly. I'm wondering,
right,
with that all access stuff, if he's going to be able to bring that to Star Trek?
Yeah, is that gonna bleed into it? Which I'm sure it will in its own way. There's a lot of things that could play out, especially since this is going to be,
he's showrunner, and he was showrunner of Hannibal, and he wrote a bunch of the episodes as showrunner.
Well, I meant this is going to be on CBS All Access, which is going to be a subscription base. So there's really no rules that need to be. I mean, they don't have, besides the first episode, which they're going to air.
Yeah,
they can go as grisly as they want.
Well, I mean,
not that that's where they're going to go.
Well, no, but I mean, Hannibal was on NBC. That's regular.
I know, but I'm just saying,
and that was pretty grisly.
I'm just saying, you can do some crazy stuff just on that. So
yeah, I mean, it could be. I'm not saying it's going to be. I don't think it needs to be all the time. But the fact that it's on this, new channel, and the fact that TV today is in generally way more violent than it was 10 years ago.
Yeah, even 10 years ago.
So
you're right.
it's.
Yeah.
Almost natural progression. And, some people think that it would, be beneath Star Trek for it to do this. And I'm like, well, it's just part of what people are expecting to see. And if they don't see it, it might.
Right. A couple things that were mentioned. There was a 2013 interview with him in the Den of Geek that he talked about different things he'd like to do when he was kind of toying with the idea of doing a Star Trek series. And he said that he would like to do possibly a Reliant-based story, which off the Miranda-class ship, which, I mean, that might not even happen. And then he also said that his dream cast would be possibly having Angela Bassett as captain and Rosario Dawson as, like, a second command. I think he mentioned something to that nature. So, I mean, that would just be great. And I just, like, because we talked at length at some points of our past episodes of who we want to be captain. And having a black female captain would be, I think, a strong thing for Star Trek to come out with as well.
I think that would be really strong. Also, there was also talk about, you know, one of his other pipe dreams back around that same time period was maybe doing a Next Generation series in the JJ universe, which is, I believe that was one of my predictions for what the new series might be. I mean, this is an old article, so it's not saying what it would be. It's just he's been toying around with these ideas. Yeah. What would Next Generation be like in the JJ universe? What would a Reliant story be like in the JJ universe?
Yeah.
Like, what would these things be about?
Yeah.
And I was actually tuning in to Jason Inman's Periscope yesterday when he was talking about Brian Fuller being on. He said he wasn't fully sold on it, and he said he would probably have rather Ronald D. Moore. I would probably rather Ronald D. Moore, too, because he has a lot longer Star Trek pedigree,
sure.
I think, because he started in Next Generation and was in Next Generation and Deep Space Nine a lot. And he fleshed out a lot of the Klingon lore, and he did Battlestar Galactica, which I really loved. It was still really dark, but I'm not putting down Brian Fuller in any way. I think he's going to be a great showrunner, but I know Jason said he wasn't super sold on it. And one of the persons in the Periscope said something about maybe Gillian Anderson could be like a captain. And I'm like, I would totally love Gillian Anderson to be a captain.
That'd be cool.
That would be cool. Awesome.
Yeah, that would be cool. Well, I mean, there's a lot of things. I mean, there's – who knows? I mean, they might just get complete fresh faces that nobody's – you know, unknowns that they've never seen before. So, I mean, that's all – you know, to be seen.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm just excited that we got a guy like this who definitely has a passion for it. He even talked about his past, of just his love of Star Trek. So,
and that's what Star Trek started his career. I mean,
sure.
So I mean, that's huge, and that he wants to come back to it is awesome.
Yeah. So, but that's a cool thing, and I was very excited about this when I read this because I was kind of worried at where it was going to be, but this seems like it's going to be a fun trip that they're going to take us on.
Oh, yeah. Like I was a little bit worried when they said just, Alex Kurtzman was on it. I'm like,
That's where I was like, I don't know.
And now that we've got a named showrunner, so we've got executive producer, Alex Kurtzman, showrunner, Brian Fuller. So now we're like building up steam. So, I mean, like, I would imagine we'd start hearing casting rumors soon.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I was talking to Larry last week, and I was like, I don't think we're going to see anything like super concrete until Star Trek Las Vegas.
Yeah.
I mean, like, you know, like time period, stuff like that. I mean, we might start seeing actors, you know,
being attached to it. Right.
Yeah. But I mean, I don't think we're getting like really hard details on what the show's going to be like until Vegas.
Right. Right. So, excellent news. Very exciting. I hope everyone else is excited about this. I'm sure the Trek... But I'm sure the Star Trek community will have an opinion.
Yeah, screw this stuff. JJ stuff sucks.
We don't even know it's in JJ. It could be in its own thing, so who knows?
I was joking, by the way.
Yeah.
I enjoy JJ movies.
Good.
The Schwartz Awakened was pretty good, and I liked Star Trek and Star Trek and the Darkness.
Darkness. Gotcha. So we're today covering the Enterprise episode, Carbon Creek. We're going to go back to the 1950s. We're going to enjoy a little Buddy Holly music and the Big Bopper and some Larry Curly and Moe, Three Stooges. So this is an unusual episode, not unlike our Voyager episode we just spoke about, where we don't see much of the main cast. We get sort of an offshoot of some different actors, which is...
It's the first time we don't see Hoshi or Malcolm or...
Almost everybody besides Tucker, Archer, and T'Pol.
Yeah.
So this story is Kim's. So Carbon Creek came out on September 2002. It's the second season, second episode. And the episode starts off with the Archer, Trip, and Tucker Archer, Trip, Tucker.
And T'Pol.
And T'Pol. That didn't make any sense. Anyways.
So Archer, Trip, and T'Pol
right.
are celebrating T'Pol's one full year on the Enterprise.
Right.
And she is agreeing to drink some wine.
Which is very unusual for her.
You know, Spock would just put, you know, McCoy put, you know, whiskey in his beans and he'd be fine with it.
They're having a little meal as a celebration of her 1 year with the crew. And she points out that the last Vulcan.
The longest a Vulcan has ever lasted on a Starfleet ship is 10 days.
10 days is all Vulcan got through.
Archer was being generous by saying 2 weeks. T'Pol's like, no, that was 10 days. And he's like,
short a couple days. So he was saying that he was writing her evaluation and he was looking some of her records. And he said that when she was in station Sausalito, he noticed that she went to an old mining town in Pennsylvania called Carbon Creek. And he was just wondering, why did you head to Carbon Creek? Because there's nothing notable there. And it seems way out of your way.
Vulcans do not take vacations.
Yeah, exactly.
Brr, brr.
That pretty much lines up to what I would think, too. But she said that she was there to visit where the first contact between humans and Vulcans were. And Tucker and Archer have a laugh.
Hey, that's not true. It was like 3,000 kilometers the other direction. Yeah. And there was a statue of Zephyr Cochrane. I know what first contact is. That's not first contact.
Right. And she says that she will regale them a tale.
Tell us a story. And she's like, okay, well, I'll tell you a story. She's very, like, cryptic.
Yeah. And that she tells a story of how her – basically her grandmother. She calls
Great-grandmother.
Yeah. She calls her foremother.
Her second foremother.
Yeah, that's right. Second foremother. And who – crash landed in a small area called in Pennsylvania called Carbon Creek. Her second foremother is Tamir, and they were on a Vulcan survey ship that were observing Sputnik being launched. I would think this would be a little bit insignificant for a race.
Well, considering like in the First Contact, it's established that Vulcans like don't give a shit unless it's like warp stuff. Like, I don't know why they'd like be investigating. And even through season one of Enterprise, it's like Vulcans don't seem to care about much like exploring. They're just like, eh. I'm like, then why do they even go to space if they don't?
Who knows?
I mean. They seem like exploring is illogical or whatever. Like, well, like what?
Well, they're definitely studying the Earth and basically to the Vulcans. Earth in the 1950s seems could have been just the Dark Ages or the Roman era. I mean, except now we've just launched our first satellite, so that's notable to them. While they're up there, they're all of a sudden they've had some technical difficulty while they're orbiting the planet and. Their ship starts malfunctioning.
Sputnik is a super weapon.
It's Russian.
The Russians are already messing with Death Stars.
Yeah. So, and their spaceship crashes, and they land out in some rural area out in Pennsylvania, close by a small town called Carbon Creek. Must be relatively far away because it's a big ship, and nobody seems to stumble upon it.
Nah.
Nobody goes hiking, I guess, in the 50s.
No, they're too busy listening to spurts on the radio.
Yeah. Spurts.
And playing pool in bars.
So they kind of camp out in the area and in a very studio-esque looking campground.
It's like, I got my flats behind me with the tree painted on it.
Exactly.
And then they got some deers to run across the
kind of surprised that they didn't just go and find some forest to shoot on set, but I guess whatever. I guess
you can control the lighting better. I mean, even in Star Trek V, they didn't shoot that actual woods. That was also a soundstage.
Yeah, but that's a movie. Anyways, so I forgot to mention when the ship crashed, their captain was killed, and Tamir was second command.
So just like T'Pol, scratches chin.
So she becomes in command. She is in command of two other Vulcan officers. There's Menstra and and Strawn.
Strawn, yeah.
And they...
Who I will probably call Mo for the rest of the episode.
Yes. They all could be called Mo, really.
All Vulcans, but especially him.
Yeah. They're camped out in this little area in the forest, and they've gone through all their rations, and they hadn't eaten days now. And they even come across some deer walking across. Like, what, that animal could sustain us for quite a few days. And they're like, that's barbaric.
That's barbaric. It's like, well, is it logical to let them find our bodies here?
Yeah. Exactly. So it seems to be the most forward thinker of this group. Seems to be this Menstra. He seems to kind of break the rules constantly and kind of break out of the chain of command, just because he has his own little incentives, ideas, and his own like kind of.
He's a Vulcan with passion.
Yeah, he's a little,
almost.
He's very different than most Vulcans.
Intensity.
He's almost like Cybok.
Yeah, he's very.
It's not so much passion. It's intensity.
Yeah, he's.
Well, I mean, it is passion to a point, because I mean he starts to risk. You know, he risks getting discovered a couple times, and
well,
he stays.
Right. Well, he decides he's going to go and check out the town, which is Carbon Creek, to see if they can grab some food or something to that nature. They go into town. They steal some clothes.
Classic Star Trek. Anytime you ever go back in time or find yourself not in the future, you just steal some clothes off a clothesline. Okay. Luckily, this time, there wasn't a police officer to stop
them.
Yeah,
Kirk and Spock did that back in the original series.
At least once.
Not more often than not, and so they get dressed in their clothes. They wear Tamir puts her hair over her ears, and then
Monstrel he wears like a skull and skull cap the entire time.
I did notice though. So after they put their clothes on and they walk to this little like bar, a tavern area, place establishment. Tamir has like high heels on. Like, where they weren't just leaving high heels out. Maybe they're on the back porch or something, but it seemed a little.
Maybe they had mud on them, and
it seemed a little too convenient. That's all I'm going to say.
Maybe they hang them out to dry.
Right.
It is a small mountain town, after all. Baseball.
And maybe they. Maybe they had they're going to hike in the mud in your high heels.
Yeah, these are real women.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know if that works.
Stuck in the mud.
Haven't you seen Jurassic World? She ran through mud and all sorts of stuff in high heels.
I did not see Jurassic World just because of that.
No, like she.
I call bullshit on that.
The actress, it is bullshit.
But I mean, the actress actually wore it the whole time. Chris Pratt said, "He's like, yeah, she wore them the whole time.
Good for her." But a real woman does not wear heels in a situation.
In
like
real
that.
Life, you're going to kick those damn heels off, because that just does not work.
I will go fucking barefoot
work.
And steal the first pair of boots I can find.
I don't know how she didn't get injured. I heard she didn't get injured at all.
I mean,
like,
when was the last time you ran in heels? I mean, mine was last night.
Three? I was three, I think, the last time I tried to put heels on and run. It's like, hey, Ma, those are cool shoes. I want to run around. Stomping around the living room.
Down I go.
Right before I hit under the crib and scared my dad.
There you go. So they get to this tavern, and they walk in, and they definitely already stand out, because this is a small community. They realize that these are strangers, and they notice that they're paying money, and they're like, oh
crap.
That paper seems to have some kind of value to it. And
what do you have for free? She hands him a bowl of peanuts.
Peanuts and some glasses, a glass of water. And they say that their vehicle broke down the road, and one of the guys says, I can give you a ride. And like,
to the gas station. Yeah. Do you got any warp plasma over at the gas station?
And this is where the guy who offers him the ride says he's going to play pool, and he wants to know if anybody wants to play him for money. And Minstra takes him up on this, where
it's like a quarter a ball or something like that.
But it's more than just that. He says that if you don't have any money, so what's the point? And he says, well, okay, how about this? I get to have a drink with your lady friend here.
Yeah.
And you know, if you win, you get the monies. And Tamir does not want to do this. And he says, what would you rather do? Would you rather starve or would you rather, you know, have a conversation?
Socialize.
Yeah, have a conversation with this person. So she kind of concedes. And
he has a bad break.
Yeah, it's a bad break, but Menstra basically cleans up in the end using his advanced mathematical mind.
It's like a Vulcan child could do this, except for the fact that how do you know the eight ball goes in last and how do you know the call the last pocket? Everything else, I mean, I can see a Vulcan picking up quick,
yeah,
but I'm
but
like...
not just that, but it's like also there's another side of it. It's like the geometry is one side, but if you ever play pool, it's also how you how the feel with the stick and how like how hard to hit it and knowing that kind of thing.
There's a lot of physics involved because you have to, if you hit it too hard, you can completely mess up the trajectory right. you were going for.
Right. And
too soft and yeah, you go
yeah.
nowhere.
I mean like, I mean, I can see like the math and the, you know, the geometry and pool. I just don't have the physical skill to make it work 99% of the time.
It takes practice. It takes a lot of practice. And I'm not, I can play, but I'm not necessarily good. You know, like I can shoot pool and I can, you know, just, you know, muddle my way through a pool game, but I'm not like a hustler or anything like that. But that being said, Menstra must have some kind of,
well, I mean, Vulcans are physically superior to, they're stronger. They probably have like, they're always, you know, I think in the first episode, they're like, you know, I think T'Pol says like, you know, Vulcan toys are more complex than the Warp 5 engine. Like, it's just like, Vulcans are pretty full of themselves.
Okay. Yeah, I guess. Well, anyways, so
anyway, he cleans up and gets the money. So that's the moral of the story.
They, and they walk out with a crap load of TV dinners. and this is, we cut back to the table where Archer and Tucker and T'Pol are all, and they're talking. And he's like, wait, so he hustles pool and you walk out with a, you know, two bags full of TV dinners, and says, this seems like a
episode
like
of the
Twilight Zone. Right. And, you know, he says, well, if you don't want to believe me. And he's like, no. He says, just keep telling the story.
No, he just thinks it's funny.
Yeah, just, you know, so she's she feels like a little bit like they don't believe, which I don't think they do either. So that being said, after that, we get a cut to where they've decided that they're going
to... They have to take work because they can't
They've got nothing.
They can't hustle pool every day.
Right, and so...
Town's not big enough.
So Strawn, it takes a job doing plumbing and odd jobs, like fixing vacuum cleaners and cleaning out pipes and stuff like that for as a plumbing job. Tamir, she seems to be like a help at the bar, at the tavern.
Sweeps the floor,
probably cleans
meditates
up.
Meditates for the people. We'll meditate for money.
Right. And
I'll show my ankles while I meditate.
And then we have Menstrual is the he is a miner.
Miner,
he,
yeah.
He's mining down in the mines. There's apparently a mine down at Carbon Creek. Anyways,
next to the creek called Carbon.
Yes, they must be mining carbon. So after all that, there is a little joke that puts out that Strawn keeps on getting asked to go to this one woman's house, and he says, "I wouldn't mind it." If her son keep calling.
Call me Mo. Yes, this is why I like calling Strawn Mo.
Right.
Because he does look a lot like Mo with the way his hair is all puffed out.
And he feels a little pissed off and he's like.
Because he's called a stooge.
He's a stooge and he goes, he says, I'm clean, you know, I'm fixing pipes and these basic things is I'm a warp field engineer, you know. It's
I'm not a stooge.
Right, exactly. So you can understand why he feels a little bit. Upset by this. So during this whole time, Tamir obviously does not want to be there. She encourages her two underlings to keep to themselves
as much as possible
because they don't want to contaminate the culture. They want anybody obviously to reveal that they are aliens. So all these things are on her mind constantly while Menstrual is basically doing everything.
Absorbing the culture as much as possible.
I mean, he's
watching TV.
Watching TV, which Tamir thinks is completely stupid.
She almost calls it like an idiot box.
Yeah. And then.
I used to hear that when I was a kid a lot. Oh, you're watching the idiot box.
Right. And the and he even starts seeing the owner of the tavern, which is strangely enough, I didn't pick up on this when I watched it, but when I looked it up, this is actually the person playing Maggie. Her name is she's Cusack. She's Ann Cusack, which is
sister
of John Cusack and Joan Cusack.
So, that's awesome.
I didn't know why I didn't pick up on it when I saw her. Maybe I just wasn't thinking about her at the time. I don't see her in a lot of.
Yeah.
I mean, she's in a lot of movies per se, but I just don't remember seeing her too often. So it probably was out of my mind. Like if I saw Joan Cusack, I'd know exactly Joan. If John Cusack, I'd know it was John Cusack. But I just wasn't thinking about her when.
Sir Redhead stepchild of the Cusacks.
Yeah. Well, she's obviously not as big as Joan and John. Anyways. So he gets sort of this relationship with her where she takes him to the baseball games.
She kisses
him a little smooch. And
he was like, that was very nice. And she's like, oh, I was hoping it'd be more than nice. Well, I did say very.
Well, it's a Vulcan, of course. So the Vulcan's not going to have much of a any kind of emotional reaction, no matter what.
Well, the great thing before this is that he's like, "Oh, I need to go out and get some wave compensator so I can, like, you know, get tune the television better." Yeah. And she's like, "Well, you should go tonight when it's dark." And he's like, "I can't. I Love Lucy is on."
Right. Exactly. So, and obviously, there's a call back to the I Love Lucy, where you know, Lucille Ball helped
get Star Trek off the ground.
Yeah.
And it was a Desilu production. So,
right. Exactly.
Lots of callback love to I Love Lucy.
Right.
The godmother of Star Trek.
The godmother. So we have. The next thing that really is a there's two other subplots that start happening here. Menstrual is working in the mine, and there's a mine collapse, and he uses his a phaser or some kind of laser type weapon to free them.
Free the miners, and he's getting lots of resistance from Mo
from Mo and Tamir.
From Mo and Larry.
And, right. And the other plot is this a young boy who's the son of Ann Cusack, Billy, and he is
trying to save up money to go to college.
He's sort of like the budding scholar of the group, and basically he becomes this focus of Tamir. He's like, I'm interested in astronomy, I'm interested in like literature and all sorts of, but I love mathematics.
Told her about all these kind of meditations that he saw in the library.
Right, and so she takes a slight interest, and he's like, okay, so here's somebody who actually
is forward thinking out of all these people that are going to blow themselves up.
Yeah, better themselves. And we have the backstory where she she finds out that just before they're leaving that he can't get into college.
The funds gone.
He doesn't have enough money.
Doesn't have the scholarship didn't come through.
Right.
Even though he scored the best in his town.
Yeah.
He got a C minus. He was the best in his town.
Right.
I don't know if he got a C minus. I just thought it was funny. It's like, oh, he got the best in the county. Maybe they're just not that bright in the county. He got a C minus and wasn't good enough for the rest of the state.
It's possible. This is rural Pennsylvania. There's
a lot of emptiness in Pennsylvania.
But what happens in between that time? So after Menstrual gets them saved, he becomes sort of like an icon of the town. Then next, they get finally a call from another Vulcan ship saying that, hey, we've picked up on your call, your distress call.
From a Tellarite ship.
A Tellarite ship that just wasn't going to.
We get that mention of Tellarites. Yeah. Yay.
And
Tellarites also don't think much of Earthlings.
Or Vulcans, for that matter.
With their non-pig nose.
Yeah. But they get the they say, we're going to pick you up. We'll be there in 3 days. And so they're technically saved. But that's when Tamir finds out about Billy not getting to college. So she decides to scour the ship, find something.
Interfere with the culture.
Yes. And she introduces Velcro. She gives a Velcro idea to some investor.
Some patent guy.
And gives her a crap load of money.
A big wad of cash.
And then she just dumps it in Billy's little jar.
Donation jar.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a wonder no one walked off with that. It's like, oh, wow, that's a lot of money.
It's the 50s. People didn't walk off with things back then. And so anyways, we got the Billy gets to go to college in the end, and then the next thing is
he became Billy the Kid and killed all sorts of people.
Wrong decade and century, but very possibly. but they,
so what happens when you start studying math and science, you go back in time, you start killing people.
I'm going to go back in time, Mom. I'm going to kill them all.
Kill them all.
But
sleep with my grandmother too.
The one change here is that Menstrual decides that he is going to stay behind, and he is going to study Earth culture. And they were like, "Well, you can't stay. You're going to contaminate the culture." And he's like, "This is my real chance to see a budding society." And he has a lot of faith in humans as well, unlike everyone else.
Yeah, they're both very down on humans. They saw the nuclear test. And they're like, "Yeah, they're getting ready to blow each other up." I don't think this is a good place to be.
And the interesting thing too is, and you guys even talked about this with Larry Nemeczek a little bit, is how we use the space race as a catapult into, you know, our space exploration, and that's basically what we saw here, is that, you know, Sputnik was the start of us becoming spacefaring, even America to start their space program, because that basically made everybody want to go into space and try to get you know, us to the moon and do the Apollo missions
and advance our technology,
yeah,
because of
just, yeah, basically Sputnik coming up. So that all being said, Menstrual decides to stay, and when they are come down to the planet, the Vulcans that save them ask them, "Where's your captain? Wasn't there?"
He died in the crash, and another guy died too. We cremated them. Lots of lying Vulcans in this episode.
Vulcans definitely lie a lot, and they don't pick up the ship.
Nope.
That ship just stayed there. Unless they just,
maybe they beamed it up afterwards. I don't know.
How do you beam up a ship?
It's a shuttle.
That was a big ship. That wasn't a small ship.
The dinosaurs did it to Voyager.
I don't know. Well, anyways, so
everybody do the dinosaurs.
And then we go
and beam up the ship.
So we end with that, and then we have back in the captain's quarters, we're having dinner, and they're like bullshit. That never happened. And she goes, "Well, you asked me for it. You know, this is a story that's why I went there." And then he's like, "Why did you really go?" And he says, "I'm a scientist. There's lots of geological phenomenon there, and I wanted to go visit it." And they were like, "What?" So, that all being said, they don't really believe her, but then she takes her leave of them, and she goes back to her quarters, where she opens a compartment and pulls out this older 1950s-looking purse, kind of showing that this actually did happen, and there we have the wrap.
And she kept an heirloom.
Right. So, and that's basically the end of Carbon Creek. It's definitely a fun episode to watch, to see everybody, you know, thrown back in the 1950s, and how the Vulcans kind of, like, they're kind of fish out of water. And Vulcans are always kind of funny as a straight man anyways. In 1950s, everyone's, "Hey, Mac, what's that?" You know, they got that kind of different take on things. So what was your feeling after seeing this episode?
Like, I remember seeing this as it came on TV, like, 14 years ago. Mm-hmm. I wasn't a huge fan of it when I first saw it, because, you know, I was starting to get into no explosions things. It's just that, you know, like, the first season had such promise. The opener had, like, the temporal Cold War stuff, and I'm like, come on, let's do some more temporal Cold War. Like, I was like, and it came up every now and then, and I just wanted a lot more temporal Cold War, because that's where, like, the story was.
Right.
So I remember seeing it live, and I'm like, come on, don't do these BSE episodes. Let's get the story going. Let's find out more about this temporal Cold War.
Right.
And so I was just like, eh. But, you know, now that I'm older and, you know, understand more about what Star Trek is, I mean, I really enjoyed the episode and actually got me in the feels a couple times watching it. I'm noticing more Star Trek is doing this to me as I'm getting older.
I think it's a getting older thing. I think it has nothing to do with Star Trek.
No, but it's Star Trek's doing it more to me. But I really enjoy this episode. It's really well done. It's a good story, and that's what Star Trek really is and should be, good stories.
Yeah. How about you, Faith? How did you feel about after revisiting this episode?
I thought it was it's one I've actually enjoyed quite a bit every time I've gotten to watch it. For every time I come away with it, like, with a new perspective, a better understanding of stuff. But it's a fun episode. For me, it's a very good introspective type of episode.
Yeah.
What about you, Aaron?
I think it's a little bit of a – I mean, it's obviously a bit of a fluff episode.
And I think that was my contention with it when I was a kid. I was like, this has nothing to do with anything.
Nah, it doesn't really. But it's kind of has this kind of like fluff story in between. And I think it's strange that they actually threw it into the second episode in the second season. I would think they would kind of put this like maybe somewhere in the middle or something like that.
But. Yeah, really weird. Yeah, that's probably why I was also upset. The second episode, and it's like, you know, because they always do the cliffhanger at the end of a season, and they begin, you know, finishing up the cliffhanger, and then they start doing other stuff. So I was wanting more of that, and then I just dropped to this. I was like,
I find it weird that they keep on going back in time, and they keep on going back in time to specific times, like close, like, you know, you mentioned before the Little Green Men episode in Deep Space Nine. They go back to the 50s.
Yeah, so, and they show the nuclear tests, and that's actually funny. The Memory Alpha mentions a bunch of other episodes where, like, things have happened in the past with aliens, but, like, they didn't mention Little Green Men, which is the exact same time when they're doing that nuclear test.
Right, right.
So I'm like, it would be great if they showed, like, the little ship flying flying off.
Is that a Ferengi ship?
Is that a Ferengi ship?
And then we have the original series with Kirk and Spock. They don't go back to the 50s. I think it's 1920-ish. I think that's because it's just – or maybe it's early 30s, just before World War II starts kicking in. So this is like Great Depression time. But still, we're all in the same kind of like 20th century era.
I mean,
like, pre-World War II kind of time.
The thing is, we were talking like before the show off air, and I was just saying, like, I just feel like they do a lot of this because it's like cheap.
Yeah.
I mean, they went to an actual town and they shot this. And, you know, being a movie studio where they probably have done lots of stuff, you know, lots of period stuff.
Right.
They probably have lots of cars sitting around and or people willing to donate them, like, oh, look, we're going to use this for a show or something. You know,
well, like the original series, they have the a couple Old West scenarios because they have
sets of
Old West, like, you know, sitting around.
Because Westerns were big, you know,
back in the 60s.
So.
Yeah, so, I mean, you had a lot of that. But that being said, still, I would like to see, like, maybe, like, you know, like, go back to the Dark Ages, go to the Roman era or something different, like, really, like, mix things up a little bit, you know.
First Contact was almost like an old Roman story. That would have been awful.
Yeah, that's different. But that being said, I just, like, you know, it's like, it always seems very convenient to go back to that time. So that's a little bit, like, not that I didn't enjoy it because of that. I just was like, I'm always like, can we just go back in time to a little further.
It's a TV budget thing. I mean, yeah. Like, First Contact could have done it, and they could have done it convincingly because it was a movie. They could have spent money on that kind of stuff, but I just don't think that would have worked for First Contact.
Well, and then the other side of it is, I mean, what I just kept thinking is, like, that's a pretty good size explosion where the ship crashed. They leveled a whole bunch of trees. It's a good size ship. It's not like it's bigger than a tractor trailer. I would think somebody might stumble across this sooner or later. You know, I mean, that's where I was like, that just doesn't jive with me too well. I mean, unless it's way out in the rural sticks. I mean, and that's a possibility.
We got no actual like geometry on how far, you know, geography, like where they are.
Right.
They just said it's the nearby town, which could have been like, you know, a day's walk or whatever.
Sure.
Who knows? Maybe Vulcans walk fast.
And I think
probably.
Yeah, they walk very fast because they walk logically and they don't make any little.
They don't make illogical steps.
They don't make little turns to say, "Hey, what's that over there?" And the last little thing that kind of
Piece of candy.
Ooh, piece of candy. but I would have liked to seen that when T'Pol leaves. That it's just left open-ended. Like, was she bullshitting them or wasn't? And yeah. I did not like that she brought the purse out. Because it's like, okay, so your great-grandmother or second foremother left you her purse? Like, it was a little bit like...
Earth heirloom.
But it could have been like, it would have been nicer if it was like something like, you know, like maybe something, a little keepsake that she got. Maybe it could have been worked in a story like a special coin or a necklace or something like that. Then she could be like, oh, that is
because
a purse seems a little impersonal. And then not just that, it just would have been a cooler story.
Vulcans aren't personal.
but it would have been a cooler story, too, if it was left open-ended that this is like, was T'Pol just jerking Archer and Tripp's chain?
Jerk by Kirk.
But were they just was she just making the story up just to tell the story, or was this real? And that would have been interesting as well. Because, I mean, she kind of left him wondering, like, was that real, or did she just make that whole story up?
You know, I think also part of the reason why they put in that time period was that they said he could have been alive for another 100, 150 years, which would have kept him alive to witness actual first contact.
Possibly, yeah. So, if he knew that was going to happen, obviously he didn't have any knowledge that.
Well, no, he didn't have any foreknowledge, but I mean, like, technically, if he wasn't killed by the violence of World War III and the eugenics wars.
Right. Maybe Khan killed him.
Khan ripped out his Vulcan heart. No, presuming he made it through all the tragedies that happened after this.
Right.
The Bell riots and all that stuff. Presuming if he lived through all this stuff, maybe he got the witness first contact.
Yeah, it's a possibility.
And then he like, dude, I've got all this data.
Research.
I've been writing it on paper.
Super old guy.
Can you scan this in for me?
It's going to take a long time.
Maybe he eventually converted it to a USB stick. Who knows?
Yeah, it's possible. So that was my thing. I do enjoy this. It was a fun episode. It's, like I said, a little bit of a fluff story. It doesn't really impact anything. I think it does look back at our culture and looking at like a point where we were doing atomic tests. Obviously, we were getting ready for our Cold War between Russia that was going to, you know, stretch out an extra 30 years.
Mother Russia.
And, you know, it's obviously was a scary time. I mean, I don't think people quite get. I mean, like, now we've been having some kind of, like, we have, like, you know, terrorism today. And, like, you know, the Russian government has been getting a little saber-rattling. But there literally was a time where it was like,
the Red Scare.
No, you really thought that you could die at any time because, you know, somebody pushed the button. And
the commies are coming. The commies are coming.
They're not coming. They're just going to drop a crap load of nuclear bombs on your town and you won't even know it happened. So it's a different time. I don't think – like I was at the tail end of that. You know, so I do remember we had drills where we hid under the desks and stuff like that.
Did you do the thumbs up thing, or if you could see the mushroom cloud over your thumb? Like was that a thing?
Yeah.
Do you remember that? Because I mean, I'm a big fan of the Fallout games. Faith is too. And like I was like reading just stuff about Fallout, and they said like the mascot guy is always like got his thumbs up, and like they said the reason behind it is if you can see the mushroom cloud around your thumb, then you're too close.
Well, I wasn't around nuclear testing.
Well, no. But like, was that something they taught you if you were on the tail end?
No,
of that?
No. What happened was they had drills where you would hide in your desk for a nuclear assault, which was complete BS. Because if there was a nuclear, there's two things that are going to happen. One, you're going to be completely incinerated, or two, you were going to get radiation poisoning and die. So you weren't going to – there was no in between if you were in an area that was getting a bomb dropped by anywhere close.
Yeah, but I mean you could still see it from far away. That's why the thumb thing.
Yeah, I don't think that was ever taught me. But I mean I'm not disputing that that's a thing. But I'm just saying is that it was one of those things where you know, it was a threat. And I remember when I was first told, and I was very young. I was like maybe 7 or 8. And I was like, wait, so, like, because I was worried about war, and my father's like, well, if there's a war, it says they'll just drop a bomb, and they'll, you know, we'll all be dead. And I was like, well, won't our army stop me? He's like, it'll happen too fast. You know, it's like, yeah. We'll just be dead. I mean, within minutes, we'll be dead. You know, it's like, it won't matter. You know?
There's no time to react.
You even if you got in your car and drove away, you would not have time to leave your metropolitan area.
Yeah. I mean, like, another Fallout reference, but the whole nuclear war that wiped out Earth and Fallout took place over 4 minutes.
Anyways, so living in that area is a different time, and I think it's kind of lost on a lot of that constant fear is like, we could all just die.
Yeah.
You know, like, the whole human, or, you know, unless you're in some pocket, you know, some little place where nobody's ever, you know, that nuclear winter is not going to hit you.
And now we're raining terror all over the world with our drone strikes. So instead of wiping out entire towns, we'll wipe out,
sure,
well, you know, buildings with people in them, hoping we'll get it. You know.
That's a different story, but I mean, and that's got its own terror to it. But I mean, we were looking at the extermination of the human, which could still happen.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not even downplaying that. But that was the 50s, 60s, and, you know, even into the 80s. I mean, Russia didn't actually fall apart till I think 91, I believe, is when, or 1990, I believe. I can't remember the exact date. But that's when Gorbachev, you know, basically,
yeah,
start changing the government and their policies. And they tore down the Berlin Wall and all that stuff. So not to get too lost in the weeds on that. But that was definitely a very different time. And it's, you know, I think a lot of younger people, that's lost on them. You know, and I, like I said, I'm just remembering as a child the tail end of that, you know.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure it is. But I mean, you know, any good history will, you know, let you know the turmoil at the time.
Sure. Well, and that's why I think this was there. They had that kind of underlined because Tamir kept on saying, well, they're going to just blow themselves up.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And that it was a very possibility.
Well, the one thing I do like about this episode is that it's not a time travel episode where they go back to the 50s.
It's not.
Thank goodness.
I mean,
they're just around in the 50s instead of it being like a time traveling thing. I'm like, oh, because I mean, it's just like it always happens that it's a time travel thing, and it's time travel specifically to the 50s. I'm like, oh, okay,
right.
And that's always very contrived. But this time, it's like, oh, it's not time travel. It's just they just were around at this time.
Right, and that's the thing is that, the fact that Tamir is played by the same actress,
Jolene Blaylock,
yeah, who plays T'Pol. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just a convenient, like a face because she's supposed to be related and looks sort of like her and stuff. I mean, they could have got a different actress, but they want to probably ground it to something that you know that you want to look at.
Yeah.
So,
but and she's not hard on the eyes or anything.
So, anyways, that's it's a fun episode, and it's definitely worth seeing if you haven't seen it in a while. We hadn't talked about a good Enterprise episode in a while, so
not since the Co-Janitor.
No.
On episode 32, it takes two to tango.
Yeah, right.
Three to tango.
But yeah, so a fun episode, and you know, a little bit out of. There's no like big arc you got to follow for that either.
No, it's just. It's a good just bottle episode where it says nothing to do with anything, pretty much.
Right.
Any references are provided for you already in the episode.
Yeah. And you get to see basically Vulcans completely in a very backwards type of world.
Speaking of backwards, you can see Jolie Blaylock put on a
dress backwards. Which is kind of funny.
So, I mean, not a whole lot of philosophical stuff other than, like, just the time period of just the fear of war.
20th century Earth, yeah. And then just sort of just where society was and where it was, you know, supposedly going.
And as I said, you know, it definitely holds up better for me as I've gotten older. I enjoyed it more for what it was than what I was hoping it would be. Because it's very different, like, you know, thinking back on it when I remember watching this live versus, like, now just watching it as part of something I already know.
Yeah. And what was some of the things that you watched and you were like, oh, you know, that's a lot stronger. It evoked an emotional response.
Probably because I just watched it on its own without like watching it.
What was the instance that we're like, oh, that's cool, or that's, you know, that made me, you know.
Like, I forgot about the Mo thing, which I thought was great.
Yeah, it's funny.
The Mo reference. I know the Desi Lu reference because that the I Love Lucy reference because that's like kind of ingrained in Star Trek a little bit. Desi Lu Studios did original series. That was a little more that. But just, you know, the fact that he was so attached to the humans and he was like, hey, look, you know, this is right to do. This is about, you know, friendship. This is not about contamination. This is about loyalty or whatever he said. So, I mean, that is like, you know,
like he saves them.
These are my friends. Yeah. So it's just, it's a lot more, it's just a lot more, I had more feeling than a Vulcan, and that kind of like, you know, it just kind of got to me a little bit. And then the fact that he stayed behind and that they lied about it also kind of got me a little bit. I was like, oh, that's...
Mine was, I like Billy, sort of the young boy who's kind of stuck in a small town. He wants to break out, and he doesn't know if he's going to make it.
Yeah, that got to me too.
You're like, oh, you know, I understand that. I felt like that before in my past. You know, like he's like, well, you know, my mom doesn't want it, but you know, there's money in mining, so he's thinking about going into the mining and stuff like that. So,
yeah.
Anyways, but that's where. There's some compelling characters, and the acting's all great too. So it's fun to watch. You know, I mean, Vulcans aren't really known for their, you know, robust acting and emotional, you know.
But that's the thing; they're playing three straight men in the 1950s era, where everyone's like, "Oh, hey," and they're listening to sports and like, "Oh, we're playing pool," and "Oh,
yeah,
you know, we're going to see the baseball game."
Yeah, right. Exactly.
It was so much better in real life.
Right.
But listening to it on the radio.
I can say, I mean, I go to baseball games, and they can be fun because you're hanging out with friends and stuff like that, but not very exciting.
No.
Not exciting.
No. My dad brought me to several professional baseball games, and so he was with his friends, and, like, you know, his friends had kids, you know, kids my age, so they were my friends, but they're all into the game, and I couldn't care less, so I just sat there and played on my Game Boy, so I didn't have that much fun. I mean, I enjoyed my game, but, I mean... It was just like
I changed my Game Boy. No, I mean, like, compared to different sports, like if you go see a hockey game, that's very exciting. If you go see a football game, that's exciting. You know, it's of course where your seats are too. It's a big.
Yeah. I think the only live sporting event I've ever seen is professionally is baseball.
Yeah, baseball is very dragged out. I mean, the only thing probably a little more boring than that is watching golf.
You're gonna drag me to a golf game. My goodness.
Well, anyways. So that is Carbon Creek.
Carbon Creek. Well, we've got two emails to read.
Nice. This has come to Papa. Let's read these now. I'm very happy.
Don't make it creepy or anything.
All right, I won't. I'll stop.
I think it's a little late.
I'll just stop talking.
The first one is from Gareth Wood. I did get permission to say his name. I emailed him after he emailed us, and I was like, hey, is it okay if I say your name on the show? He said yes. So just in case you guys are like, oh, you said someone's name. That's not my own. So
now he's regrets telling you the name.
He regrets it.
Because you made a big thing about it.
Yep. So I do try to get permission before I say people's names, just so in case you don't want to be public. But here you go.
Just read the damn email.
No! I'm going to give a preamble. I'm going to filibuster this email.
Sorry, Garrett. I'm sure it's a fine email.
All right. Gareth.
Gareth, sorry.
Sorry. So, great show, guys. Listening to you is so enjoyable that I'm steadily working my way through your back catalog. Only started listening to Frame of Mind. That's where you started. Your installment of Darmok Last Duke was brilliant and full of insight. The way the three of you and Guy Davis talked about how language would be formed in a society that communicated through allegory was really informative, and it'd be great if you could have more shows like that in the future. It would also be nice if you got some in-depth look at your favorite episodes. Faith got her favorite fives, and that was interesting, especially Warlord, probably the best Kes episode. But also when the Bow Breaks, which has always struck me as one of the weaker TNG outings. So, yeah, that would be great if you could see some of that. But also, I'd love to have your thoughts on some truly awful Star Trek episodes. Like Plato's Stepchildren or Shades of Grey. I'm going to be honest here and say that I want to hear you rip them to pieces.
Challenge accepted.
Well, but it would be great to hear your thoughts, any thoughts you have about them. The Star Wars and Spaceballs pieces were brilliant and made for a nice change. I can't wait for the Galaxy Quest episode and any other sci-fi films you want to go with. On that note, I'm definitely looking forward to your take on Star Trek V and would love it if you reviewed some of the other Star Trek movies. Anyway, thanks again for making such a great show, and I look forward to it every Sunday and any time I'm out for a long drive. Yours, Gareth Wood. So some quick things that I noticed I can answer immediately. Faith did her Fave 5 early in the show because in the middle of the show because Aaron and I did it on our first episode. So once you get back to the very beginning,
right.
You'll get some of that from us.
Yeah, we talked about
it. I was playing catch up.
Yeah, yeah. So we were just trying to get the different episodes all in one episode. And when you hear our first episode, we do pack all.
Yeah, in our first couple episodes, we packed so much in that we're just like speeding through.
And at least we got a chance to talk more about Faith and her five because it was just five that we had to talk about. And back then, we used to pack a bunch of episodes into one episode.
Oh, I mean, we will again once we do a themed episode,
sure.
But we haven't done a themed episode in a while. Also, I don't know how we could do more about language because there's not a whole lot about language.
I don't think he was talking about language. I think he was talking breaking down and talking about like a lot of the background thoughts and the impact. Like Darmok is one of those ones that you really.
It's a deeper episode.
You really. Like when you talk about Carbon Creek. Carbon Creek, there's not a ton of things other than us talking about the idea that we could at one point completely obliterate ourselves with our atomic power and at the Cold War that was happening and that the fact that Sputnik was the beginning of our space program worldwide. So that was probably the biggest takeaway, deep thought you could take about Carbon Creek other than just being the fish out of water. But yeah, I think that's what where he was going more with that, not the breakdown of language, and that was just because that had to do with Darmok.
Gotcha. So our Star Trek V episode is going to be pushed out indefinitely until I can get a schedule set up with Trek Geeks that works for all of us. Unfortunately, scheduling conflicts between two podcasts. So it's going to be Star Trek V is going to be on hold a little bit. We have talked about the Wrath of Khan and Star Trek in the Darkness. We did a Khan three-parter starting with Spicy Space Seed. So we talked about the original episode of Space Seed. And then we talked about the Wrath of Khan. And then we talked about Star Trek in the Darkness. It was a nice little three-parter. So we have done two movies, and I don't want to do too many of the movies too quickly. Because I hope to be on the air for years, and there's a finite number of films. And we'll be talking about Star Trek Beyond with Jason Inman.
When that comes out.
So that's going to be, that's going to be our big one for this year, Star Trek. Maybe Star Trek 4 this year, and then maybe Star Trek 5. But that's probably...
Yeah, we'll see. Sometimes we just get a crazy idea and we go through it. So could be anything, Gareth. Anything could happen. Garth.
Anything could happen. Let's see. Galaxy Quest, maybe sometime in April, maybe May. I haven't got anything nailed down to that exactly. And as far as Sunday goes, we're moving our episodes. This will be our second episode to release on Tuesday and our new release date.
Right. Yeah, we kind of changed things up for our scheduling reasons.
Yeah. So, we really thank you for your email.
Thanks, and also really great
feedback.
And we definitely, we have, because of your email, I think we are planning to do maybe our most disliked episodes. So we'll start working on making our list that we don't want to actually see any, or those episodes that we do see, we roll our eyes. And
like Shades of Grey is one like I really didn't want to do. Like I like if you can get like a letter writing campaign to like beg us to do a whole episode on Shades of Grey, like maybe I'll consider it. But like that's super painful. Like, but if we do like a, you know, a multi,
we'll talk,
we can do like a small snippet on it.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know if I can. I don't know if I can make myself watch that episode.
Again. Come on, you gotta do it. It's your homework.
Take the pain.
Take the pain. So cool. Thank you so much for your email. That's awesome.
And I got another email. I'm not going to say the name because I didn't ask for information on this one. He was listening to our Star Wars 7 show, and he said he wanted to add something regarding the EU becoming legends. 2 years ago, he got to meet Timothy Zahn when he came to Tyler, Texas for the Rose City Comic Con. Hmm. In his panel, he talked about his feelings on reclassification of the extended universe of Star Wars Legends. And if anyone is entitled to an opinion, it's him. What he said was, to make more movies, Lucasfilms had to do that. If not, they would be locked into this large collection of internal contradictory stories and quite limit their storytelling options. Plus, they aren't completely removing the stories, but they're putting them in the bottom drawer where they can pull out ideas where they want. And this is extremely evident in, yeah, you know, the Star Wars Rebels cartoon show. And, you know, I mean, they're taking things here and there where they want to. And he did send us a picture with himself and Timothy Zahn.
Oh, wow. Very cool.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, so you get to meet Timothy Zahn. That's pretty cool. Yeah, I mean, I totally agree. And Timothy Zahn, he wrote some great Star Wars, you know, novels. The Heir to the Empire, Dark Force Rising, I think.
Yeah, you
know, the trilogy.
He did some great stuff, and I remember reading them back in the '90s, and it was a lot of fun. Part of me is like, you know, it's sad to see that the expanded universe got kind of like kicked out. But the other part of it is like, you know, I think they're just making way for new information. And like you said, I mean, they're definitely just going to hold it in the idea drawer to pull out when they need something different come out. So.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And I mean, they're already doing that a little bit. I mean, I've heard rumors that, that Grand Admiral Thrawn might even show up in the Rebels TV show at some point.
Cool.
So, I mean, like, you know, that's directly Timothy Zahn's character. So,
and hopefully,
I mean, I would love to see that. I love Thrawn.
And maybe you'll get some royalties from that as well if they start showing up, like, in a big movie or show like that.
Yeah, that'd be cool. Get some kickback. Although I don't know if, like, the ownership of the property is just, like, all. It's like, we own everything.
Yeah,
thank you for
question.
Thank you for writing all the stuff. We own it all now.
It's funny because it's all according to what your contract is. Like, you know, some like comic book creators, they create a certain characters and they still make royalties off of them. But it was all according to when they created them, because sometime they had more, some decades they had more money that are not money, but they had more the creators had could get more of royalties from their creation. Nowadays, I guess if you make a character, you basically sign it away immediately. So,
I mean, for movies like Star Trek, I know, like, you know, the new characters like Carol Marcus, they got like when you create a new character, you got to keep the rights to it. But like in something like Star Wars, where you're like licensing out to write these books, like
right.
I don't know if you get to keep that.
Yeah, I don't know,
because I mean, like I think. I mean, I don't know for sure. I'm just speculating. But I would imagine that Star Wars as a whole owns that. So people who are also writing Star Wars books can write it without, you know, use your characters for continuity's sake, so you don't have to pay the original person who came up with them.
I don't know. I don't think you have to pay, but maybe they get a royalty from that. So even if it's like, you know, pennies on a dollar for every book or every movie or whatever was comic book or that was released at that time, you know.
That could be.
So.
I'm not sure how it works, but thanks for listening to our Star Wars episode.
We it was fun to go over that. And
we got Rogue One coming out December of this year. We got Episode 8 coming out December of next year. So
I heard they're already starting filming on it too.
Episode 8, yeah, they just started officially. I think they did some filming a little while ago with Luke and Rey on the island, but like the principal photography started like recently, according to an article that came out today.
Cool. Very nice. Yeah, thank you for all your emails. And if anybody has any other thoughts or feelings that they want to throw at us or show ideas or...
If you want to give us any ideas, let us know. That'd be awesome.
We're definitely going to be working out our most disliked episodes.
Yeah, that'll probably be coming in like New Year. Or not New Year, but like our 1 year... In our second year, because we're coming up on our 1 year birthday on the 30th of March.
Right.
That'll be Synthaholics on the air for a year. It's crazy to think about that we have not pod faded. We're still here. We're releasing episodes.
Still having
all the
fun,
time.
Still being funnier.
We haven't killed each other yet.
Not yet.
It's not kind of
close. But we. It's funny that just everything that we've done is like there's just while you do it, the more you learn about how to do this and also how to properly do a podcast show. It's like we kind of just went into it just kind of blindly. It's like, hey, let's talk about Star Trek.
Like Geordi without his visor.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so.
We went into it blind. Hopefully our quality has increased over the span of time. Hopefully we're still funny.
I'm not.
No.
I'm done.
But if you guys want to leave us any special messages, you can, leave us a call. Leave us a message at Skype. If you have Skype, you can... leave us a message. It's Synthaholics Podcast. So SynthaholicsPodcast. ABCD.
You should like come up with a jingle for that.
Anyway, but yeah, if you want to, sure, maybe, I don't know. I'm not.
Work on it.
No, I don't want to. I do too much work for this anyway.
I don't want to work anymore.
No, but if you guys want to listen and leave us some messages, we'll play them on the show in case you don't want to email us. So, Synthaholics Podcast, all one word. You can leave us a message there.
Cool.
You can email us at Synthaholics@yahoo.com. You can all our music is provided by Warp 11.
The Warp 11.
The Warp 11. You can find them at warp11.com and on Twitter at Warp 11. You can find the podcast online at Synthaholic Duo, Synthaholics.com, Synthaholics Podcast on... Synthaholics Podcast on Skype. I'm really rubbing this in because Trek Geeks had their 1 year anniversary and they got two people sang them songs when they
you can sing us songs or you can just make fart noises.
We probably won't play the fart noises unless they're funny.
I would encourage the fart noises.
But I want to. I just want to see if we get more calls in than Tricky got for their birthday.
Oh, man.
I love you, Bill and Dan.
It's gonna be like that, is it? All right. Yeah. So that's something fun you can do. So you can leave us a message if you don't want to read or write an email out to us. You can just tell us what you think.
We recorded a special voicemail greeting for you today. You can find me online on Twitter at David_J_Duncan.
You can find me at Blackbird2004.
You can find me at Faith Hertzberg on Twitter.
And you can write and review us on Apple iTunes. Leave us stars. You can also find us on Stitcher.
Oh, remember with those stars, we will give you a shout out if you give us stars and a written review.
Yeah, very nice. Very nice people leaving us many nice reviews. And like we said before, you can write us an email at Synthaholics@yahoo.com. And
we will read them on the air like we just did.
And and you can, we encourage also that you share this show with people.
Yes, please share it. We want to be whored out.
Just whore us out to all your friends and family. So tell your grandfather who can't hear too well.
What's that?
Tell that strange breathing man under your bed about the episode that keeps you awake at night. Tell the... until that strange, strange janitor that cleans up at night. Maybe listen to Synthaholics.
If you're under the man bear peg, tell them about Synthaholics. Because there's nothing more than a half man, half bear, and a half pig loves more than some Synthaholics.
That's right. They like to get drunk. Drink away their genetic oddity.
Anyways, guys, thank you so much for listening. Live long and prosper. We'll cry till we laugh, and we'll both shit our pants. You're the best drinking friend I ever had.
Oh, that show fell apart at the end. I didn't even know where to go with it. I felt lost.
So much for us getting better with age.
Got worse.
Well, we're definitely not a fine wine.
No. Or more like a fall down the stairs drunk.
Hey, but you still get up at the end.
I know.
We never ever claimed to be wine.
Or more of just like skunky beer.
At best.
Mm-hmm. At the breathing holes, right?
But step one, cut a hole in the box. Step two, put Aaron in the box. Step three, he dies in the box.
No.
Take the hell out of the box.
Oh, tape it shut. Shut that down. Bury it. Oh, nobody wants to see me or hear from me.